Hey, welcome to First Ascent Podcast, a conversation about climbing. I'm Jay.
I'm Lee. You might think we'd have this dialed by now, but we're always refining the beta.
I think that's what keeps it exciting for me, because each episode still feels like a go-for-broke on-site attempt.
Join us regularly to see if we send it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to your favorite New England-focused climbing podcast.
All right. Well, here we are, back for another episode. This one is one that's been long awaited by at least a handful of listeners. We're gonna focus on bouldering today. What do you think about that, Jay?
Sure. But before we do, let's talk about Patreon.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. We're going to focus on Patreon today.
We're going to focus on your opportunity to become a member of our growing and vibrant Patreon community. And for $5, $7, or $10 a month, you can support not just podcasts like ours, our podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Not just some podcast, but it's going directly
into our pockets.
I would say directly to our pockets, but we are so far in the red on this pursuit.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No.
It's kind of just going back into the till.
Yeah. So we need your support. We really appreciate your support. And you'll get a whole bunch of other episodes over there, like pretty close to 50 episodes. So yeah, if you just want to get more of Jay and Lee and Jay, then that's over there.
Yeah. I've been talking to people lately. Like, I was talking to a friend of the pod, Scott Stevenson, the other day, and he was asking me, like, so if I sign up for Patreon, do I get all like the backlog stuff too? The answer is yes.
Yes.
I mean, you've got a lot of backlog stuff over there that you can dig into. And I actually was just re-listening to his episodes the other day. That's right. There's a whole bonus episode just of us talking to Scott. So head on over there once you're done with this episode, because, well, this is going to be a banger.
Hey, and remember to rate and review us. We haven't had many ratings or reviews lately. So, like, get on that. Seriously. What are you doing with your time?
Right. So I want to introduce our guest today. Now, we did take questions on Instagram about bouldering. I was like, all right, well, we're going to have a bouldering expert on. So, let's get with some questions. And I think one of the first ones was Matt Wallace, another bouldering expert in New Hampshire. He said, I want to know who the unnamed expert is. Well, I mean, I can't just hand you that kind of stuff willy-nilly. So, I mean, there begs another question. If you're like a committed boulderer, aka practice climber, are you actually an expert? No.
Can you be?
JK. Speaking of JK, this guy is JP, Jake Perry, local boulderer to New Hampshire, and really just a explorer extraordinaire. I mean, this guy's out looking for chunks of rock everywhere he goes. And
small rocks, very small rocks.
Yeah. Keeping his ear to the ground for any word of boulders that might be climbable. And Jake and I first came into contact back when he was just a kid. He used to come into Vertical Dreams in Manchester for birthday parties and climb the elevator shaft and kind of got the bug there, but then really dug into climbing back in 2014 when he went to what is now New Hampshire Rock and Fitness, used to be Evo. And he met the Photo Brothers, Brad and Troy, who are also serious forces in the bouldering scene around here. And the rest is history. So welcome, Jake. How's it going?
Hey, thanks for having me. Yeah, stoked to be here for sure.
Well, stoked is a key thing for you. I find that you are one of the most stoked climbers I see around. I've never seen you with any energy other than, like, let's just say your energy is at 11 typically when you're out, you know, climbing around or searching.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And your videos that you post and stuff like that are oftentimes just as goofy as they are rad. I mean, they're both like, and just exciting and fun. And like, you know, you're just not out there with a scowl on your face looking to, you know, show everybody how cool you are, but you're definitely doing cool things and having fun while you do it. And I think that's absolutely key. So we're psyched to have you on.
Right on.
Yeah. Hey, Jake.
Hi, Jay.
Now, Jay, had you met Jake before?
Yeah, I've seen Jake in passing, especially at the climbing gym, and I'd followed him on social media, and we just sort of connected the other day, and I was like, hey, you boulder a lot. Like, do you ever climb on a rope?
A little bit. Rope climbing really scares me a lot.
Tell me why. Why does it scare you?
I don't know, because I have to trust something other than myself. So it's funny, like, it seems like my brain is almost broken, because I'll do all these high balls, and I feel so much more confident on a high ball than I do on, like, a safe sport climb, because I have to trust a rope and a harness. And every time I leave the harness, I feel like I'm going to die.
Would you say that most boulderers' brains are broken?
Some more than others.
It's funny because, like, I use that same term for myself sometimes when I'm talking about how I don't fear heights and, like, that type of thing properly. I'm kind of like, yeah, I think my brain's broken. Like, I can be up, you know, on top of a cliff scouting for a way to rappel in, and all of a sudden, you know, I'll slip and grab a tree, and, like, my heart rate doesn't move. But the thing that does scare me is hitting the ground, right? And so, like, bouldering, you're hitting the ground all the time, and that's much more disturbing to me.
Yeah, you just need pads.
On a typical day of bouldering, say you're going out to Pawtuckaway or the Blackjacks, how many pads are you yourself carrying?
Totally depends what I'm getting on. These days, I pretty much never go without at least two pads. I'll carry three sometimes. It's very rare for me to carry four. But sometimes I'll do multiple trips too. So, like, two trips of two pads each or something like that. Yeah.
There's no good way to carry more than one pad, is there? Like, do you have, like, a way to strap it to the other pad, or are you carrying it on the front?
I'll argue against you there. Actually, there is good ways to carry more than one pad. It's called ratchet strap.
Okay.
Jay, I don't think that we can really go out on a limb and say, like, all right, well, here's a fact about bouldering. You know,
here are bouldering facts.
Yeah.
Like, just the other day, I was trying Leave It to Beaver at Pawtuckaway, and I had three pads strapped together. So,
like, was it fine to carry, or is it, like, a huge pain to, like, is it, like, pulling you backwards because there's so much, like, leverage there?
It's not too bad. You have to strap it the right way. So what I do is, let's say this is the main pad that's attached to your back. I'll take the other ones and strap them so they're up, elevated against it, so that the weight is a little bit better.
So since this is an audio medium, like, picture he's doing prayer hands, but he puts one hand higher than the other. And that way you don't have the leverage pulling you back as much.
It balances the weight more. And you carry the backpack on the front, so you're counterbalanced.
This is the beta we need to go bouldering.
Do they make front packs, or is it just a backpack on the front?
It's just a backpack that's become a front pack, yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, one last thing in the way of intros, I would just like to thank you for your commitment, because let's just say Jake hasn't been feeling too well, and he rallied to come on today. And so, you know, we appreciate that. Keeping with the schedule, you know?
Yeah, I didn't want to miss this. Are you kidding me?
Always reliable. So we did take a bunch of questions, but I first have my questions. One of the things I've been most interested in, like, you've been all over the place, you know, discovering and exploring new areas. But one place I'm really interested in your bouldering experience is exploring some of the new stuff and putting up new routes, new boulders out in Rumney, because I've been saying for, like, decades that the next Battle of Rumney will be fought on the boulders. I was just looking around being like, there's so many good potential boulders around here. So just, can you just tell us, like, what you have been doing out there and who you've been doing it with?
Yeah. So my friend Brad kind of did some exploring, and he saw all these boulders, and he ended up showing me them. And, like, I'm sure many other people have looked at these boulders, but it's pretty much all the stuff right under Waimea. So we've been calling it the upper Blackjack boulders.
It's got a ring to it. I like that.
Yeah. The approach is really not too bad. It's pretty much the last 5 minutes of the approach, or 10 minutes if you're slow, is very, very steep. But a lot of the landings up there are definitely pretty heads up. And a lot of the top outs are pretty heads up. Like, you have a big top out slab to finish. But beautiful views. You get the nice view up there. stuff up there dries pretty fast because it actually gets the sun. But basically in the last 2 years or so, I think we've put up almost 100 problems from V0 to V11. So a lot of stuff up there, some pretty cool highballs. There's this one V3 that we did that's called Dream Within a Dream. And it's basically this, if you can almost imagine like a sine wave or like just a double wave feature. Mm-hmm. And it follows this thin seam crack that kind of cuts diagonally up and left across the feature. And you end up doing this cool like mantle move to a jug at height. And then you match that and you reach up to a big chicken head jug on the lip and you top out and get an awesome view. The thing is absolutely killer. I'd argue one of the best V3s in the state. It's amazing. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff up there.
That sounds so cool. I mean, the thing that I say about bouldering, I mean, I say a lot of things about bouldering, not well informed necessarily, but the thing I say about bouldering is when it's good, it's really, really, really good. But when it's bad, it's awful. You know, like a soaring V3 that looks like a sine wave that has like some exposure to it and like cool moves and a beautiful location, like that's as good as it gets, right? Or whatever grade, but like the aesthetic is so good. But like an ass dragging sit start at Pawtuckaway where the crux is pulling your ass off the pad.
There's some bad ones. You don't get more than 2 inches off the ground on some of those.
That's awful. So that like the variation is so much bigger than it would be in rope climbing, because like even kind of like a bad rope climb, at least you're like climbing, you know, at least you're like going places. But like a bad boulder problem, like oftentimes they're just dumb for lack of a better word. Yeah,
it's funny because like I'm motivated by kind of all of it, like the high balls and just like the nice tall lines. That sure, they're like attractive and I do love doing that stuff, but I also, when I see like a rad little problem that's like, oh, here's an obvious start and couple moves and then you got to fight your way up this mantle, like that can get me motivated too. So I kind of love all of it. I've definitely been known to put up some real ass draggers, that's for sure.
So we've kind of stumbled into one of the questions that somebody posed, which was high ball or low ball, right? And I'm guessing that we all should, you know, kind of chime in here. I mean, not to be somewhat non-committal, because Jay hates it when I do that, but like I'm all about the medium balls, you know, like I like to not have my ass on the ground if, you know, if possible. But I think these days I look at high balls as top rope roots, and I love something like, I'm trying to think, like probably say, you know, like Leave It to Beaver is great. You mentioned that problem, like that's perfect. I feel like you're not getting so high up that like you're going to break your ankles, but it's enough that like, oh, okay. Like I had to do some moves to get up here, you know, like Ride the Lightning, like hot, like that's high enough that like, you know, there's a little consequence, but it's not like, you know, unless you come off really weird, you know, you're not likely to take a trip to the hospital, knock on wood. Where do you stand on what's like the prime height? I know you said you like it all, but.
I mean, I have to be noncommittal too. I do like it all. I mean, if I were to pick one, high balls are definitely more inspiring typically, or any problem that's like 15 foot plus that just like looks amazing. But something I've been doing a lot lately is rope rehearsal. So pretty much most high balls I do these days is, unless it's something I'm really confident about, I'm rehearsing it with a rope. And even it's funny to bring up Leave It to Beaver, because I actually like threw a rope over on that because I wanted to check out that top out. I've seen a lot of people fall on the top out. So, and I because of the rope, I was able to figure out really good beta with like a sneaky toe hook that prevents this barn door. And now it just feels so much more locked in and I'm not worried about falling up there, which is nice.
That's great.
I'm trying not to fall above 10 feet as much as I can help it.
Yeah. And once you discover the technology, you know, you're like, oh, wait, like this just makes sense. You know,
why don't I do this all the time?
Yeah, totally.
Ropes were like an alien technology for me for probably my first like 5 years of climbing. I didn't even know anything about that.
And it feels nice to just know, like to feel good on the route, right? Like if you're up there hanging and you go, okay, so this holds here. And if I grip it this way, it feels great. I mean, how many problems, you know, Jay, this kind of echoes, and I say Jay because we talk about this stuff, these tactics a bit. This kind of echoes this whole progression in rope climbing, where it used to be you went ground up, you didn't inspect, you didn't use hangdog techniques. And now those techniques are very common on ropes. And this is similar with the bouldering thing, right? We used to have this ethic, even when I thought that hangdogging was totally fine, we had this ethic of you start at the bottom of the boulder and you work your way to the top. That's how it works. So, I can kind of pose that to both of you guys, but.
My answer to that is I want to do climbing, right? If you do one move and you're at the top, it's you didn't do much, right? And I'm thinking about boulder problems that I've been really inspired by. And one of them is Dominator in Camp 4 in Yosemite, right? That one of the first V11s, V12s that was done. Jerry Moffitt did it after a lot of the locals were trying it. And it's 7 feet at the top, but it's so steep and so angled that you're doing a lot of moves to get to the lip, which is at 7 feet because you're starting down in. I think that's really inspiring, even though it's not a high ball, but you're doing a lot of climbing on it. So the other thing, working it on a rope, I was thinking about this yesterday because I was on a route at Rumney that I've been sort of trying to figure out the crux move on. And I stick clipped past the crux and I was hanging on the next bolt. And I was thinking as I was calling down to Kate, I'm okay, down 1 inch. Okay. Up 1 inch, up a half inch down. And and I was getting my body exactly in the perfect spot for me to do this move, work this move. But bouldering, unless you're doing what Jake did on Leave It to Beaver, you're not doing that. Right. Maybe you're doing the power spot or whatever, but climbing hard with a rope allows you to really dial in exactly where you want your body to be.
Yeah. So, with bouldering, what's tricky is that some of the heel hooks and stuff that are going on, unless you have a power spot, you just straight up can't even get off the ground. To bring it back to Leave It to Beaver, there's this really bad sloper and a little crimper, and you have to have a heel hook in order to do this big move out left. And unless you just start a couple moves lower or get a power spot, you're not able to pull on that spot and do the crux move. So it is a lot of positioning and it's tricky, but yeah, I'm for either of it. And then to bring it back, I do sometimes appreciate a one move low ball if it's something where it's you can learn a lot from one super technical move. You're not figuring it out until you do it perfectly. And you're not even going to have a shot until you do it perfectly.
Yeah.
Even the low balls have lessons to offer.
Can you think of a good low ball? Is there one that sticks in your mind as a really good one? I'm putting you on the spot here.
What about Zap?
Zap, that thing's rowdy.
Where is that? I don't know that one.
That's V3 is as V3 does. That's for sure. That is hard. That one's at Pawtuckaway. It's right over by Ride the Lightning, actually.
Yeah.
The first time I did that one, I didn't know how to crimp. When I first started climbing, I would 3-finger open hand everything.
Yeah.
And that's how I originally climbed that. And now that I've gone back and repeated it, I'm I don't know how that was possible. You got a crimp.
Basically, you kind of sit down in a little bit of a hole and climb out of the hole and then do this pretty gnarly, slopey top out.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of fun.
When you're topping out, you're not going to dab.
That's a good problem. Magnificent Bastard at the Ridgeline in Pawtuckaway, that's another good one. It's literally just a mantle. This V5 mantle up this nose feature, and it just feels like a wrestling match. It is unbelievable.
I could think of Blau. I just keep picturing Blau, but that's it's a one move boulder problem, but you're at least starting as a stand start.
That's not low ball.
No.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's a one move high ball.
Monkey press right next to that is a low ball.
Okay.
That's another just total mantle situation. There's another one near there called Cooper's Problem, which is this V8 crimp traverse. I would not say that's a good problem, though.
Well, there's Pawtucket has a ton of these like really fun like lip traverses. In my opinion, they're fun, like slopey lip traverses.
I love a good lip traverse.
I mean, if you climb up Pawtucket a fair bit, like you kind of have to. Like, there's like some of the really interesting routes there. You know, are always, you know, heel hook and slapping these slopers. Yeah, it's kind of fun stuff.
Jake, what do you do for like skincare? As you're climbing up Pawtucket a lot.
Yeah, because to be honest, your lashes and your lids looks great.
Well, thanks. Yeah, just take some sandpaper to the skin. Make sure you don't get any flappers. I have really dry skin, so I actually have a big problem with getting splits. I get these basically where the fingernail, the edges of the fingernail meet the tip of the finger. I get these little splits that it's basically like that edge just continues out into the tip of the finger. And it's really annoying because I can't really sand it away so much. And I'll just be crimping and it'll just open up.
Do you glue it then?
Yeah.
Yeah, super glue.
Yeah.
But that's also not great because then I'm not getting the same friction because super glue is glassy. So you're not getting the same level of friction.
One thing I've tried a bit is super gluing, like, you know, you get the dab of super glue over it and then sand off as much super glue as you can while still leaving enough to hold the thing together. So that's something I've been playing with.
You could put super glue on your tip and then just like dunk your tip in like some sand. So then you have like,
oh yeah, friction on the super glue. Nice. That's futuristic right there.
Yeah. Right.
I remember when I was bouldering at Pawtucket a lot and my tips would get so bad that like I'd go bouldering and then that night they'd like wake me up in the middle of the night because they were like so sore, like just because it's such sharp rock.
Yeah, that's when you try to do what I call it, the toothpaste test. If you go and open like one of those, it's like a toothpaste just with sharp little twist off cap. If you can't open it because your skin is that bad, then you failed the toothpaste test.
Which means you need, what, like 3 days off or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
that's bad.
That's hilarious.
That's a good test.
Or just tape every fingertip and keep going.
Yeah, that's a thing for sure.
Yeah, I don't go through skin like at all. So like I can climb day after day after day. Skin is never my limiting factor unless I go to Pawtucket bouldering. And then it's just like the skin just falls off my hand. That's the only place. It's my kryptonite.
That's crazy. Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't matter where I climb. My skin just, unless I'm on sandstone. Sandstone treats my skin nicely.
It's a good feeling, Lloyd. Cool. Do we want to jump into some questions?
Yeah, sure. We answered one.
First, I have to clear the ones that were kind of like asked by many people. First off, us announcing that we were going to be doing a bouldering episode on April 1st was interesting timing.
Yeah. Did you see the Gunks autoplay?
Oh, yeah. I actually had dinner with Christian from Gunks App the day before, and he was just like, check out what I'm going to drop tomorrow.
That's great. Yeah, that was hilarious.
Yeah.
There was one post with the Megatron, the V17. Somebody did it and downgraded it to V15, and it was like, that was such a good joke because it was so subtle and it could very well have happened, you know?
Yeah. Basically, I just didn't pay attention to anything on Instagram yesterday because everyone's jumping on the April Fool's bus. So I'm just kind of like, yeah, nothing that I see.
Nothing's real.
Can be trusted. Yeah, exactly. But anyway, yeah. So we had a bunch of people say, is this an April Fool's joke? We also, you know, got to have the shade thrown. So bouldering question. Asked by at least three or four people, why?
Why?
I mean, we could just go with like the whole, okay, yeah, ha ha, why?
But no, truly, Jake, why?
We've kind of covered some of the reasons why bouldering captured you. So the purity, the fact that, I mean, you already mentioned that ropes make you nervous, which, you know, Tori runs into this sometimes where she can get nervous on a well-protected sport climb, but then solo something and feel fine because, you know, she kind of knows she's got to do it. You know, it's like, it's that no fall mindset. Some people can find the no fall mindset, but then entertaining falling on a rope is like, I don't know. It's like accepting that might happen.
Right. It's trust in yourself versus trust in the gear.
Right.
When you said, Jake, the purest form of rock climbing, it reminded me of the book that I have right on my bookshelf right here, Master of Rock, the biography of John Gill. And it's, I mean, so many pictures of just John Gill bouldering in like the 60s and 70s, like before bouldering even was a thing. And it's just like, just the act of moving over rock without any encumbrances, without any gear, just like, and you know, he was the first person to really start dynoing on rock. And I mean, it is like, there are those moments where it's just completely pure. And, you know, you're not going to get it with, there's all these, you know, you gotta get, got ropes and you got gear and you got belays and like just the moving through the air over the medium of stone can be pretty amazing.
It's very freeing for sure. Yeah. And you just don't have to deal with all the gear. You got crash pads, shoes and chalk and that's it. I mean, I know crash pads are heavy, but ropes get all tangled and then you gotta do harnesses and I don't even know what that is, but yeah, I mean, I love it.
I love that the complicated part about climbing on a rope for you as well. The ropes get tangled. There's a harness.
I don't even know what a harness is.
I've been looking around lately and just saying out loud and to myself that bouldering was a simple activity that was sort of purist and didn't have much for encumbrances. And now I watch people heading out and I'm kind of like, Jesus, they got, you know, three pads, they got a stick clip with five brushes on it, they got a fan, there's like, and of course, you know, you can still do it, you know, you can still do it with a carpet square if that's how, you know, if that's how you're rolling. But like, it's just interesting over the years watching it become more complex and more complicated.
Oh, as a developer, it's definitely, I carry probably way more gear than somebody who's going sport climbing, because I got a leaf blower, I got a pry bar, I got wire brushes, I got all this stuff. I probably have a rope and a harness, and I'm carrying two crash pads.
And sometimes a tangled up rope.
Yeah, but it's usually tangled if it's me being the one putting it back.
We have a science correspondent, Catherine Hinkle. Her nickname among our crew is Rapunzel because her rope is tangled every time.
Awesome. That's great.
Jay, that was a reference to a Disney movie. I don't know if you get the reference. But
what's Disney again?
You'll get there. You'll get there.
Okay, thanks.
We have a great question, which I think we'll be able to riff on a little bit. And that is, can we get a grade consensus on pyramid power?
It's a V8. It's my first V8 ever. And I took V8 and I think it's V8.
How tall are you, Jake?
I'm 5'6".
Yeah, I think there's a graph where the grade goes up as the height goes up. I think if you're 5'6", 5'7", 5'5", I think it's V8. I think then it just increases to infinity the taller you are.
So it's funny. I think the first move on that thing is the crux for me, for sure, which seems to not be the crux for taller people. But then the match and the next move is the crux for taller people, but those aren't nearly as bad for me. I just remember really struggling with that first move. But that's a great problem.
No, we always talk about how grades are very subjective, but like I've flashed V8s. I've worked that thing off and on.
I can't see too good. Is that a boulder over there? He flashed V8s. Woohoo!
I don't think Jay can identify a brag. That was not a brag. Anyway,
20 minutes in and we learned what Lee flashed. All right, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, no, I don't get your diss. These days, flashing or on-sighting V8 doesn't make you a superstar. I'm just saying this is a grade that I can do, and I have never come close to pyramid power, though I did last time I got on it mess up my shoulder so bad that I had to kind of take a month easy because I was just going after it so hard. So man, what a problem.
I've not done it.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I've not done it.
Hey, is that a boulder over there?
That pyramid hole is so cool.
You think it's cool?
Yeah, that one's really good. The pyramid hold is so cool. And it's also got its kind of own natural tick mark because you just follow the ridge of the pyramid and that's where you're supposed to mash. So that's a cool problem. Definitely a fitting name too.
Cool. Well, that's why he's the expert, because he's done the route. So,
yeah, I think that I would say V8, V9, V10, you know, like the taller you get, I think it's probably if you're over 6 feet, I bet it's V10.
I really like grade ranges because you could say, oh, it's somewhere between V7 to V9, depending on your size, style, sandbaggery, and if there's a slot hold on a climb, sausage finger status.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You speak from experience.
Yeah, just I put up a climb recently that has like a nasty little slot hold, and if you have hot dogs for fingers, you're probably only going to get one or two fingers into this thing, and it's going to feel impossible.
Well, that's what John Gill proposed, the B grading, the bouldering grading, like B1, B2, B3. So B1 was a boulder problem. B2 was like a boulder problem that was equal to the hardest climbing done. And then B3 is an unrepeated boulder problem that as soon as it becomes repeated, it bumps down to B2.
Yeah, it's like more of a personal scale. I like that scale.
Yeah.
But also my brain is wired towards Vs, so what can you do?
Yeah, I think that was the thing that John Sherman said, was like, I'm not a huge fan of the scale these days, but it's kind of what we've got. So, you know, I guess we're going with it. So this caller was saying that there's been a lot of new bouldering development in New England. And he was just curious, what are some of the other great spots that have seen, maybe existing areas that have seen new development or totally new areas that are blowing the doors off this thing?
I mean, sorry, Jake, I'm going to jump in here. I got a spray for the Yellow Jacket boulders and the Yellow Jacket boulder itself.
I still have that up there. It looks cool.
This boulder, the specific Yellow Jacket boulder, there's a whole boulder field around it, but the specific Yellow Jacket boulder is just one of the best boulders I've seen in New Hampshire. It's the right height, maybe a little high ball on the right, but like normal on the left. It's slightly overhanging on most of its sides. It's got like pockets, strangely, pockets with crystals in them. The granite is such that it's like pockety granite, which is really unique. There's a whole grade range from, you know, V0 to V9 on it. There's potential for much harder things on it. It's in a beautiful location, a generally good landing. The only downside is you have to walk, what, like 30 minutes to it, Lee? Like 45?
Between 30 and 40 minutes, I think, somewhere in there, depending on your pace. But
that's not too bad compared to some of the areas I've been to lately. But
and it has so much more potential. So I'd love for you and your crew to get up there and like fill in the blanks, you know, like there's so much potential up there just on that one boulder.
It does seem like that whole area has a lot to offer. Yeah, to answer the question a little more, though, there's development happening everywhere. One of the most unique bouts of development actually came at Smuggler's Notch a couple years ago. A chunk of the cliff fell off, and my friend Brad and I happened to actually be there when that happened, and it sounded like 20 trucks had just crashed in the notch. It was almost like a small earthquake.
Oh, yeah. Vermont climbing is awesome, isn't it?
Yeah. We ran into the woods, and there was like four new 20-foot boulders, and that's become the landslide boulders.
So did you get to climb on them when they were like still hot? Like there's still steam coming off of them?
They were covered in dirt. It was unbelievable how dirty they are.
Ah.
I did one arret on one of them the same day they fell.
That's amazing.
And there's actually a boulder in the middle of the road too that I did a climb on. That area has yielded some really, really awesome problems. And actually there was one boulder that had a bolt on it because it was from a sport route.
Oh, no way.
And unfortunately, somebody actually chopped the bolt, which is so silly. I really wanted to try and like lead it as a joke and take a small whipper on the bolt. It's pretty funny. But that's an exciting spot. And then there's also all the stuff at Rumney. Clough State Park is a spot that's near me that I've been developing for the last like 8 years. We've got around 250 problems there. Between all varying sizes from literally 4 foot low ball to 35 foot high ball in all grades, V0 to V12.
Is that like similar to Pawtuckaway?
It's different rock. It's a lot more crystally. The rock in that kind of general Hopkinton, Henniker, Ware area of New Hampshire is, it's kind of not so great. You can find some pockets of good stuff, but it's all this like really crystally stuff. But like a couple of problems there. Interestingly, it has this deposit of like almost like this sandstone type stuff. Like there's two problems there called Gilded Fleece and then Tears of a Lone Wolf that have like kind of nicer rock. And Tears of a Lone Wolf is a great lip traverse. That's like one of the, that was actually my FA. It was my first V7 too.
And a great name.
Thanks. Yeah, I worked it by myself pretty much the whole time. But that's a classic. There's kind of a new area that my friend Caleb and I have been working on. That's got great rock. That's in southern New Hampshire. We'll probably post that sometime in the fall once we develop more. And then also White Mountain region is just unlimited with bouldering. I mean, unlimited. Lifetimes upon lifetimes of bouldering potential in every notch there. I mean, yeah, I went with my friend Frankie out to Owl's Cliff last year, and there's so much under there. And then, I mean, I heard there's a lot in the greens.
Yeah, it's almost like every big cliff has a scree field, and so, like, that's just boulder areas, you know? Like,
yeah, those areas are a bit intimidating, you know, because you're looking at, like, a two-hour approach or something like that.
Without the two-hour approach, one that comes to mind that seems like there's a lot of hard potential is below Whitehorse. Have you walked around below Whitehorse and checked out some of that stuff?
Yeah, I finally went and checked out the big slab this past year. Yeah, and I did some bouldering. There's a lot of boulders there. That's great.
I see stuff that like looks like well into the V double digits, you know, highball stuff. It's amazing. The rock there is beautiful.
Have you done much at the base of Sundown Ledge?
I've gone bouldering there a little bit. Yeah, Sundown's cool. I know there's a crew out there that's been hitting the development pretty hard there. Yeah, there's tons of rock there. Another spot is actually Shag Crag. Under Shag Crag, it's basically just another blackjack boulders, but maybe wow, even more. You're looking at a big approach, but like that whole mountain, just all the way around that mountain, there's just boulders, that beautiful rock, and that's cool. I'm probably the only person that can say I've been to Shag Crag twice and only gone bouldering. Yeah, there's some cool stuff out there. There's one boulder that's just like, I mean, it would have like 50 problems on it if the whole thing was clean.
Wow.
That sounds great. I mean, there's so much just like, there are a lot of cliffs in New Hampshire, but for each cliff, there's hundreds of boulder possibilities, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's actually astounding how much bouldering potential there is. And then like, I mean, Maine is, there's so much rock in Maine. It's just the issue with that is a lot of it's on private land or maybe kind of iffy access, but yeah, so much rock out there.
Why do you think that until recently, like most of the bouldering activity was centered on Pawtuckaway and the blackjack boulders in Rumney? Like, I mean, it went for a long time where 99.9% of the people who were bouldering there. And then it like exploded beyond those places. Like, why do you think that happened?
Well, I think there's just really that much there just at Pawtuckaway alone. I mean, there's what, like 1500 problems there or something like that, which is actually insane. When you think about areas just around the country, like how many of them can you say like, oh, the one park has 1500 problems? Not that many. And I mean, Pawtuckaway is seemingly endless. So you could just rip around there forever. I mean, there's been a lot of dedicated people that have done that for a long, long time. And Rumney is just, I mean, it's great rock. I think Rumney is my favorite bouldering in the state just because of the way the schist is. It forms cool holds and it actually forms pinches. Pawtuckaway, I think, has like 5 pinches in the whole park, but Rumney's got a lot of them, and there'll be like overhangs with actual holds on them, which is great. And yeah, I just like the way that the rock is so beautiful up there too. But yeah, it's kind of hard to say. I mean, I'm sure there's been development around the state in these little places that, you know, but the thing is there's just nobody like spraying about it or talking about it. It's just, you know, oh, I went out bouldering under White Horse today. Like, nobody's really talking about that until recently, I think.
Yeah, just for reference, I was like, huh, I wonder. So I looked up the bouldering in Yosemite Valley, and there are only 421 routes, boulder problems listed for Yosemite Valley, but there's 1,500 for Pawtuckaway.
There's really only 400 at Yosemite, huh?
That's how many are listed, yeah.
Pawtuckaway is three times better than Yosemite. Over three times better than Yosemite.
Yeah, exactly. You heard it here first, folks. Pawtuckaway better than Yosemite.
I have a sneaking suspicion there's probably more roots there than Pawtuckaway, though. I don't know. I'll have to go count.
I would imagine most of it's not posted.
So a couple questions related to highballs, and I know that you do enjoy a good highball boulder, so this could be fun. So I think this was meant to be sarcastic. Like, what's a highball? But what is a highball? Like, when do you start considering highball tactics or highball mindset? Like, around how high up? Or
I would say about 20 feet. Or really, it can also be less than that if the landing's bad. I would think whatever height due to the landing or whatever, maybe the moves that you don't want to fall. If you fall, you're looking at getting injured.
Yeah. If you're going to come off at a weird angle, like if you're, you know, you could fly off of the pads or whatever. Yeah.
Let's say you're doing a 15-foot problem over a bad landing and there's a heel hook at height. I mean, that's kind of starting to enter high ball territory because you're looking at probably getting injured. But I would say in general, 20 feet.
Can we do a high ball and then sketch ball?
Yeah, that works too. I mean, or just a, you know, danger factor.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're climbing above 20 feet, you don't want to get, you don't want to fall there. I mean,
yeah.
Like the whip is probably the perfect high ball. I mean, the crux is at whatever 12 feet and then you still have like an airy step up move. That's definitely a high ball.
It's kind of a highball classic, yeah.
Yeah.
How about like, is it EDCL crack at the...
Oh, yeah.
That's definitely a highball for sure. I took a pretty big fall off of that one, and I pretty much rolled in the road, yeah.
That's my highest fall on a boulder.
I've heard about it.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's a perfect landing because you're landing in the road. It's perfectly flat.
Yeah.
It's maybe hard.
That's a great problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully that area will open again someday because those are some awesome problems in there. Pine Tree Crack is my favorite V0 I've ever done.
It's pretty amazing.
That one's fantastic.
The other one was, at what height is it no longer really possible to spot a highball boulder? Like, when do you just kind of step back and go, all right, you're on your own?
I would honestly think if it's a highball, as soon as they enter highball territory, spotting becomes dangerous for the spotter and the climber.
Yeah.
At that point, you just want to be moving pads. Because like realistically, what are you going to do to somebody who's falling from 25 feet? They're going to peg you into the ground like a tent peg.
Yeah, you're going to have two people hurt rather than just one.
Yeah.
My tactic is usually just like kind of spank them on the way by. And then it feels like you did something. Just kind of slap.
Yeah. I mean, I would say just move pads.
Yeah.
And if you're the climber, I mean, try to communicate. Like, if you feel like you're about to fall, you know, say something. Don't just spit off the wall.
Yeah.
I mean, be like, oh, like, watch me here. If you can.
Yeah. And that way, like, you know, someone can have a pad. Like, I've had a bunch of times where I've had the pad in my hands and kind of thrown it, like, as I'm seeing where the boulder is going to land, you know, kind of toss it under them and that kind of thing.
There's that famous, I think, V6 in Waco that John Sherman put up called C-Spot Run, which is like, you know, you get to a certain height and your spotter like runs away, you know? Yeah. Have you ever done the thing where you hold a pad up above the other pads and the person hits the pad and like...
I was actually about to mention that. That is like a pretty cool technique. I haven't done it yet, but that seems pretty cool. It seems smart.
Yeah, I've seen it done where, like, so you hit the pad, but the pad, then the pad falls with you.
Yeah, it breaks your fall.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like parachute pad.
Yeah. Well, it's like compresses that air, right, underneath it, and then, like, slows the fall somehow because that air is being compressed and, like...
We'll call Catherine.
Yeah.
I'm curious if some boulders will start using like piles of cardboard boxes, because I've seen that for just some like stunt guy.
Oh, for like ski practice, like practicing like ski jumps and stuff.
Or jumping through a window.
Not like a foam pit, but just literally cardboard boxes. I saw a video of some stunt guy just jumping off like a 35-foot cliff onto a pile of cardboard boxes. And it's wild. The level of commitment to just like do that is unbelievable, but he was totally fine. And it seems like that might be a future for crazy highballs. Have a bunch of cardboard boxes on top of the pads. I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder about putting pads on top of cardboard boxes. I wonder if that would compress differently. We definitely need some science around this.
Cargo nets is a cool tech that people have been doing for like terrible landings.
Oh, right. That crack in Utah, they had a cargo net underneath it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a problem that just went up in, I think, Connecticut, where they used a cargo net actually for the landing.
How about a bounce house? Put a bounce house underneath it.
That would be crazy. That sounds fun. I'd probably just jump around in the bounce house at that point.
Yeah, right.
So with all these advancements in like ways to keep somebody safe, I think it's really interesting that like, all right, well, if we put cardboard boxes under, or if we've got, 30 pads, or, you know, whatever we can do to keep boulders safe, like the technology's been there forever. Like you could throw a rope over the top and just climb it on a rope and even have some slack so you don't hit the ground, but it's still exciting. Like, why do you think we don't want the rope, but we do want all these other ways to, I mean, they're very complex and gear heavy ways to keep people safe. So what do you think keeps people from just using that old school tech, just having a rope?
I mean, I think it's just the purity of it. Like, it's definitely a different send if you do too big to flail out in Bishop, which is a 55-foot V10. If you do that with a top rope versus if you, I mean, at that point, it's a free solo, even if you're using 30 crash pads. I mean, it's a totally different game, totally different send. But there is an argument for stuff, like especially way out in the backcountry, maybe where, you know, there's a lot of fragile plant life around the base of the climb. Like, why not just use a top rope instead of like destroying all this plant life to put down 10 crash pads?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like, I see the purity argument from an experience mindset, but I don't get the purity argument from having all of this, you know, all of this gear. You're covering the forest with all this stuff. And if it becomes popular, then all the plants in the area die. Like I used to go to Bishop 20 some years ago and, you know, like there was all this plant life around and it was nice. And you know, the more we've tossed our pads on everything, the more everything's died. And it makes it almost like from that angle, less pure from a like climbing in nature standpoint. And so it's just I know there's no real like one answer, but it's a fun discussion in my opinion.
I think it's a human nature thing too, where you're doing things a certain way. You bring one pad and you go bouldering with one pad. And then like it makes sense to do two pads. And then since you have two pads, you might as well do four pads. And then, you know, you've got your pad, so you might as well bring your fan. And then you've got, you know, since you have your fan, you might as well bring your light so you can, your construction light, so you can climb at night because that's when the good temps are. And then you might as well bring a couple more pads. Like there is a slippery slope component to kind of what we do. And I noticed that with just filling up my pack for a day of climbing. Like while I'm bringing this, I might as well bring this. And that at some point it gets to a level where you're like, what the heck am I doing here? Like, maybe I need to like go back to step one and like reassess what I'm doing.
Yeah, there's a lot of gear involved these days. I mean, I guess you could just go back to the carpet patch. That's pretty low impact there.
And I think that there's people, I mean, I could picture, you know, like you strike me as this, you know, guy who's in it for just purely the love of bouldering. So I'm sure you have days where you go, you know, throw your shoes in your chalk bag and one pad and you go wander off into the woods and go play. And like, and then there's other days where that's just not the vibe, where you're going out, you know, with a crew to go siege, you know, like new routes on a new boulder and whatever. And that's cool too. It's just, It's just different vibe.
We've been told in the Waterville region that every single problem has been sent by somebody who just happened to be there on a mountain bike, and therefore there are no new first ascents.
We've been cut off on FAs within a certain grade range. I forget what the said grade range was. But.
Right. If it's this grade, then people have climbed it. Definitely. No matter how dirty it was or how many rocks you pulled off, it's definitely been climbed by somebody who just climbed in their biking shoes.
Yeah, that there's definitely, you never know. Like one boulder that kind of thought brings to mind is, I think it's called the Large Marge Boulder off the rest stop headed south on 93.
Great name.
Oh, that boulder. Yes.
There's like this really juggy side to it, and it's super easy. You can climb in your sneakers. And I just imagine this has to be one of the oldest problems in the state, because I'm sure some high schoolers did this thing back in like the 50s or something, a party on top of the boulder or whatever. And yeah. It's all jugs and it's super chill. And like that was definitely the first ascent was definitely not made by a climber on that thing. It was by someone in their sneakers for sure.
I mean, the first ascent bar is much lower in bouldering. And you know, I'm not implying that your FAs are less valuable than like a sport FA or a trad FA, but there are a lot of people, you know, being an admin on Mountain Project and approving submissions coming in. There are so many like V0 boulder FAs that are being posted all throughout New Hampshire all the time. And I'm not saying that like that's a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. But like there's such a lower barrier to entry to like climb a rock, name it, post it on Mountain Project.
I think that's one of the beautiful things about bouldering, though, is just the fact that you really don't need any gear. It is, at the end of the day, probably the cheapest form of rock climbing, because if you want to, you don't even need a crash pad. You could just climb things that are within your ability level, and all you need is shoes and chalk. And you could even argue that you don't even need those. You could just climb barefoot and not even use chalk. So, I think that the low bar to entry is a pretty nice thing about it.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, you forgot one thing you need, which is an internet connection to then upload it to Mountain Project and put your name as the first ascensionist.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah. No footage or it didn't happen.
Right.
There's the joke back at Devil's Lake is like, how many people does it take to do a new boulder problem? Like 3, one to climb, one to spot, and one to post it on Mountain Project.
Yeah.
So I like this one. Most aesthetic boulder in New England.
Ooh, good one.
Most aesthetic. I mean, my first answer is pretty much just the whip, usually, because I love that thing.
Yeah.
But a couple other ones are either the fin or touching the sky, which are right next to each other at Smuggler's Notch, or this problem that my friend Brad just put up, which is called Levanter, which is this crazy highball. It really bridges the line between a high ball and a free solo. It's like this 30 plus foot arete up in the upper talus at Smuggler's Notch, but you climb that and you have an amazing view, and it's more appropriate as a top rope because the top third of it is the crux. That's an insane problem. I mean, you look at it and it's just absolutely jaw dropping.
Wow.
That's awesome. One that came to mind for me right off was, the White House Boulder.
Have you been out there at the Davis Boulders?
No, I haven't been out there yet.
It's worth it. It's just the location is really cool and peaceful. And there's a great lip traverse out there, too, called Double Helix. H-E-A-L.
Oh, heel. All right.
Well, or H-E-E-L. Yeah.
That's how you spell heel.
I'm not great at spelling.
Pay no attention to those documents hanging on his wall that say that he's an English an English genius.
Yeah. How about the WeHoo Wander Boulder?
That's pretty amazing, yeah.
It looks cool, yeah. I yet to touch any of the Waterloo Valley stuff. Just haven't
you gotta come
made
out.
It there at all. Yeah, I know. It looks cool.
Big follow-up question, Jake. What have you been doing with your life? Why have you not been out to all these places in Waterville?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've just been distracted by other spots. Just been going up to the upper Blackjack Boulders or going out to Valkyrie Wall and doing some stuff there. So it's just, or other places. Yeah, just been sucked into other spots.
You've been doing amazing things. Okay. Our portable fans aid. I feel like this is like asking sport climbers our knee pads aid. They're just trying to throw shade. But what are your thoughts on the fans? Like, what's the deal?
I mean, I like them. And I also think it is a bit much. I mean, it does sound kind of silly. Like, oh, you're bringing a fan out to the boulder so that you can like hold your hands in front of it. I do think it actually, it helps. It makes a difference. There is a reason why people use it because it does help. I don't know. I think it's just another tool in the toolkit. I mean, if you want to say a knee bar is an aid, fine. Like, so be it. It's going to make the climb easier. If you want to say a fan's an aid, sure. I mean, I think it's whatever you want to do. I don't have a fan, but I have a leaf blower. So I'll just like run my hand in front of the leaf blower for a little bit sometimes.
Well, Jake, you've got two more fans right here on this podcast. So often our final question is, what are your goals in climbing? What are your, like, what's a short-term goal you have and maybe a longer-term goal?
I guess short-term goal is just to keep having fun with it, keep developing. There are a couple key, like, problems and stuff that I'm interested in doing.
Which ones? Don't be an ice climber. Tell us the names.
They're FAs. They're way out in the woods.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So he is being an ice climber. Yeah.
And then there's like a hatchet sit at Rumney. There's like this knife blade arete. It's actually behind Sprague-Saurus and Pyramid Power. The stand is an awesome V5. And then the sit is this V10 or 11 that Troy got the first ascent of. And I've been putting some time into that. It'd be great to do that thing. And then long-term goal, the long-term goal for me has always been to try and do Ile Saint at Pawtuckaway, just because I saw that my first day ever bouldering outside, and I was just blown away by the impossibility of it. Mm-hmm. Like, how is it possible that someone can climb something with non-existent holds? And I've always thought, oh man, how cool would it be to do that thing someday?
That's the one that Troy did fairly recently, right?
Yeah, Troy got what I believe is the third ascent of it.
Is it a Dave Graham?
Dave Graham got the first, and then this guy, JP Ferrone, probably got the second. And it's hard to say if someone else had done it.
That problem's amazing because I too, like back then when he sent it, like I was bouldering out there and I walked out and might have even seen like some chalk and been like, what the? Like, I really didn't understand how it could come together. And it's almost been like a project of my understanding of climbing that now when I go out, I can get like, I understand what's supposed to happen, you know?
Right.
And like, and even that's fun, like to just start to get it, you know?
Just to be able to have the vision to see that something goes. Yeah. I think right. with development, there's a thing that's just an eye for a vision, and not yeah. everybody has it. And I think it's something that can be trained by just looking at a lot of rock, just being able to understand, like, look at this boulder and be like, oh yeah, this thing goes for sure. Looks like this is the start. Oh, looks like this is maybe how you climb it. Maybe there's a heel hook here, whatever. Oh, looks like there's a right exit here.
Yeah.
Oh, does the thing go, like all this stuff.
And it's cool because there's such a fine line between understanding what's possible at the higher limits and just having this blind faith that makes no sense. Like, I've seen people before be like, oh, this definitely goes. And I'm just like, no, like there's no physics that make that a route, you know? It's like, and so it's kind of fun to have that understanding. That's cool.
Well, that's great, Jake. So thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for being such a psyched member of the community. I mean it when I say
for
like,
sure. Yeah, no, I love it.
You are more psyched and fun to be around, you know, when I run into you out there than, you know, most people. And I just appreciate the energy. So, yeah, keep it up.
Thanks. Thanks, Lee.
Have a good one, man.
Yeah, you too.
See you, Jake. Thanks for listening to this episode of First Ascent Podcast. We're really happy that you stopped by. If yeah. you like what you've heard, you can rate and review us. Please rate us 5 stars.
At least 5 stars.
We don't want any lesser ratings. And you can find us on Instagram.
Our Instagram is First Ascent Pod. And we also have our own self-promoting Instagrams. Mine is xxleewexx.
So extra. Mine's very basic. It's JAYKNOWER.
Real original.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
See you next time.